If you have a passion for the Second Amendment and value the freedoms that our Founding Fathers made possible for you to enjoy, then you come to the right place. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fun With Guns on KBCRadio.com. I'm your host, Richard Espinoza. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to lock and load. Let's have some fun with guns. Before I begin, I'd like to address an important day in American history that happened last Friday, and it's something that does not get enough attention. It was 244 years ago last Friday, on April 19th, 1775, the birth of Revolution Day. It was a day when the brave Centennial soldiers ambushed the British Army that became known as the shot heard around the world. Here is a quote from Centennial Captain John Parker on that historical day. "Fire unless fired upon, but if they mean to have a war, let it be begin here." Today, we are grateful for our Founding Fathers who made it possible for us to be free and to enjoy the freedoms we cherish. But today on Episode 5 of Fun with Guns, we'll be discussing more about American history as we pay tribute to Samuel Colt and Oliver Winchester. It's been said God created man, but Samuel Colt made them equal. Colt Firearms is one of the most iconic manufacturers in American firearm history, along with Winchester. The famous single action army was as American as apple pie. It's the gun that won the West, and it has been owned by many Americans in wars and also by many gunslingers and outlaws. Well, joining me today as my guest is Mike McRae, who's an expert and historian in 19th century Colts. Mike, thank you so much for coming on my show. It's a great honor to have you.
Thank you, Richard.
Okay, Mike, tell us about how you became an expert with 19th century Colt.
Well, it started when I was a kid. I used to watch cowboy movies on TV every Saturday morning. And then during the week, when as I got a little older, they had all of those great Warner Brothers westerns, Maverick, Cheyenne, Bronco. But one of my favorites was Colt 45 with Wade Preston. And that made an impression on me. And so I began an interest in those weapons ever since then, and it's never stopped.
Okay. And the Colt Single Action Army, tell us a story about that firearm.
Well, that particular gun was developed as a weapon for the United States Army initially. They needed a new revolver. They had a plethora of different revolvers, a lot of them left over from the Civil War. They needed a new revolver that had a certain amount of stopping power. So essentially, they came up with the 45 caliber round, and then they developed a gun to go with it. And some people have attributed Sam Colt as the guy who developed that gun, which is not true. Sam Colt passed away in January or February of 1862, and so he had no part in the design. In fact, that gun was designed by a team, and it became the round, the weapon for the United States Cavalry up until right around the turn of the century.
Okay. And give us a brief history about Sam Colt and how he became an icon in the firearm industry.
Well, Sam Colt initially got the idea for developing a revolving pistol when he was at sea as a probably an apprentice seaman in the Merchant Marine. And in fact, while in his spare time, he carved out a woodworking model of a working revolver. When he got back, he secured enough money to basically design a revolver that became the Patterson Colt. And it had it made at the Eli Whitney Manufacturing in New Jersey. The gun became somewhat popular, especially among the Texans, who were having a lot of trouble down along the Mexican border and with Indians along the northwest part of the state. Yeah. And it was a fairly popular gun, but it had its drawbacks. It was very slow to load, and it was, the mechanism was really quite delicate. So if you use that in rough terrain, getting dirt in it was not a good idea. A Colt went out of business with that gun in around 1842, 1843. But he wasn't done with firearms design at all, because in 1846, a man named Samuel Walker who was a captain in the Regiment of Mounted Rifles, looked up Sam Colt in New York City and told him he had an idea for improvements on the Patterson Colt, which eventually then became the Big Walker Colt, which is a real robust, hefty 4.5-pound pistol with a 9-inch barrel, 44 caliber, and was really quite a powerful weapon. The gun was popular, especially among the Texas Rangers during the Mexican-American War. Since then, they made modifications to that, and then out along came some of their smaller guns, the 49 Pocket, 51 Navy, later on the 1860 Army, the 61 Navy, 62 Pocket Police, 62 Pocket Navy, and then further on in 1873 came the Single Action Army.
Okay. And to tell us a little bit about the Colt 1851 Navy, what do you know about that?
51 Navy was a development from the 49 Pocket. The 1849 Pocket pistol was a small pistol, 31 caliber. It was easily carried, but it didn't have a lot of hitting power. So they came up with a barrel with a gun that had a 7.5-inch barrel. It was a 36 caliber revolver, and they called it the new model belt revolver. But because it had a naval engagement scene on the cylinder, it became nicknamed the Navy. Later on, frontiersmen and then army officers and soldiers in the military during the 1850s developed holsters for them. So it became as much a holster revolver as it did a belt revolver. And it was one of the most popular firearms used by both the North and South during the Civil War.
And tell us a little story about Oliver Winchester and how he became an icon in the firearm industry other than Samuel Colt.
Well, Oliver Winchester was a different kind of guy, where Samuel Colt was somewhat of an engineer. Oliver Winchester was a kind of an entrepreneur. He was the money man. He was the idea guy. And he had ideas for making improvements on the current, during the 1860s, the current model of the Henry rifle. And so he got together with Tyler B. Henry, who was the developer of that rifle, and said, and basically bought, he had the money, so he bought Henry's rifle, bought the patent, and hired Henry to go to work for him. But the first thing they did was make improvements. They put a loading gate on the in the side plate of the receiver. They put a forearm on that rifle so it would be easier to handle. And they made a carbine version so it would be easier to handle on horseback. Fired the same 44 caliber rimfire cartridge, but it was a much more modern gun for that era. And eventually it morphed into the 1873, which was newly improved and completely redesigned rifle.
And from what I understand, Benjamin Tytler Henry, he also made a rifle for Abraham Lincoln. Am I correct?
He made a Henry rifle for Abraham Lincoln that was nicely engraved. And in fact, that rifle sold at auction about 10 years ago.
Really?
No, I'm going to say 20 years ago now. That rifle sold at auction, I don't know who owns it at the moment, for $2 million. That's in 1995 dollars, so you can imagine what that rifle would be worth today.
Oh, really? Because I thought that was in the Smithsonian Institute.
It right now may be. It may have gone from whoever bought it at auction into the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it was a 44 rimfire, which is now an obsolete round, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about the Colt Coach Gun.
Oh, Coach Gun? That would also become known as the 1878 side-by-side shotgun. And it was a side project of the Colt Firearms Company. The stagecoaches were getting held up because they were the primary means of transportation to and from the railroads. The railroads weren't spread all across the West yet. They were in specific places. So if you wanted to get from the railroad to some of the smaller places, you had to take stagecoach. They were being held up by highwaymen, outlaws, robbers, whatever you want to call them. And they needed an improved shotgun in order to basically defeat these guys. So they came up with a break open, mostly 12-gauge, although they built some 10-gauge. And it's my understanding, and having seen a specimen, they also made an 8-gauge. And I've heard in some cases they may have made one even bigger than that, but I've never heard of it or seen it.
Yeah, we did talk about a little bit about that. And little did you know, also Grover Cleveland owned one, which is now in the NRA National Museum.
Right. He was a big guy. So an 8-gauge for a hunting shotgun would not have been a problem for Grover Cleveland. Some of us smaller people, I don't think we would have handled one that well.
Okay. And tell us about the Colt Dragon revolver.
The Dragoon?
The Dragoon.
Yeah, they were the development off of the Walker Colt. The Walker Colt was that big weapon that was designed by Samuel Walker, but it had problems. One, the cylinder was real long, so they had a tendency to overload it, which would cause the cylinder to explode. Also, the loading lever that would use to ram the cartridges into the cylinder was held in place by a big heavy leaf spring in the midway on the barrel. Firing that gun, especially with, say, 50, 60 grains of powder, would cause that lever to come down, and sometimes it would slip into the cylinder and jam the gun. You can see that would, in the middle of a fight, that would not be a good thing. So they redesigned the Walker, put a latch on the front of the lever, right up at the muzzle of the gun, made the cylinder shorter, made the gun a little more compact. Instead of a 4.5-pound gun, you now had a 2.25-pound gun. But they were still very robust. They were .44 caliber. They were very powerful, very reliable, and quite sought after, very popular in the 1850s, and they found service through the Civil War and on into the Old West.
Okay. And tell us about the Colt 1855 Root first model.
Well, the Root revolvers were another side project, and they were designed, oddly enough, by a man named Root, who was one of Colt's engineers. And they had a side hammer that was attached to the side of the frame instead of going through the center of the frame like your more common revolvers. This made for problems. These guns were, again, the mechanism was delicate. They were fairly small. I don't think they came in calibers much above 36. And they were not very popular. They didn't sell well. The Colt would basically put one in some of his presentation cases, basically to get rid of some of the existing models that they had. However, the Root would find its way into becoming the 1855 revolving rifle. And again, it had the same problems, only on a bigger scale because it was a bigger weapon. For instance, the 2nd Iowa Cavalry was armed with Root revolving carbines during the Civil War. In 1864, they were asked to get rid of them and replaced with the Spencer repeating carbine. The troopers were only too happy to be rid of them. So it gives you an idea that guns had reliability problems. However, that rifle would have its golden hour. The 21st Ohio Infantry was armed with those rifles. And at the Battle of Chickamauga, they held off Longstreet's corps for 6 hours, repulsed several charges before they were overrun. They were armed with this. The amount of firepower convinced General Longstreet that he was facing more men than he actually was.
Okay. And then I understand the Root, a year later, which was the Colt 1856, made one in .28 caliber, the second model. What do you know about that one?
Basically, it was the same kind of gun. It was just another smaller pocket pistol that they decided to make on that Root frame. And again, it was not a very popular model. The model 1849 Colt pocket revolver in .31 caliber was probably one of the biggest selling revolvers of the 1850s. The 1851 Navy, in fact, came in right behind it.
Okay, and then tell us about the Colt 1865 police percussion.
Well, the police percussion, that gun is actually the 1862 pistol. It's a percussion revolver that came in a 4-inch, 6-inch, and 7-inch barrel. And it was said that the guerrilla chieftain William Clark Quantrill packed a pair of those along with a couple other guns during his rather infamous career as a guerrilla leader during the Civil War. But it was made out of some of that newer steel that Colt came out with. It was a mixture of steel and iron, the same material that the 1860 Army, the 61 Navy, and some of the other newer guns were made out of. It was a popular gun. It was 36 caliber, 5-shot, very reliable pistol, and sold quite well to the civilian market, and a lot of military people liked them.
And tell us about the Colt Gatling gun. I've been dying to hear a story about that one.
Gatling gun. Ah, the Gatling gun. Probably the most famous, infamous, and misunderstood weapon in American history. First of all, the movies would have you think that the Gatling gun was a machine gun, and they have it a lot of times deployed or shown to be used like a machine gun. It's not. It doesn't even come close. It is a hand-cranked, gravity-fed. By that, I mean the ammunition is loaded in a stick that feeds downward into the gun as the barrels and the breeches go by, and then the gun is fired. I've actually fired one of these things. You crank them at a rate of about a rate of fire, bang, 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 bang. You don't dare crank it any faster than that, or it will seriously jam. I mean, seriously jam. And then it's a chore to clear the jam. I've seen this happen. And believe me, I would not want to be in a fight and have to depend on one of those things if that happened.
I'm chuckling on that. Okay, and then the Colt ring lever rifles made between 1837 and 1841. What do you know about those?
Again, they were built on the some of Sam Colt's very first designs of firearms. And they were designed basically for sportsmen. Again, these were like the Patterson. These were very, the mechanism in these guns were very delicate. And the U.S. Army tried a few of them, in fact, were issued to some infantry scouts during the 1837-1838 portion of the Seminole War. They did not perform very well in Army hands. Dirt got into them, dust from the Florida swamps and, you know, wetness and so on got into these guns and caused them to malfunction. So the Army declined to buy them, and I think that was part of why Sam Colt went out of business in 1842.
Okay, and how about the Colt pocket percussion revolvers?
Well, again, that follows your 1849 pocket pistol, which was a five-shot percussion revolver, very reliable gun. Many of the 49ers who came to the Gold Rush here in California carried those with them. Good gun for personal defense. And again, it had a 4-inch barrel. You could get them with a 6-inch or a 7-inch barrel. So if you wanted one that was kind of like a holster pistol, you could carry one of those. If you wanted to just stick it in your belt or hide it in your pocket somewhere, you could. Another gun was the 1849 Baby Dragoon. Only problem with the Baby Dragoon is it didn't have a loading lever on it, so you had to take the gun apart in order to load it. Not a real practical design.
Okay, now the gun I'm waiting on, now I'm licking my chops on to hear an interesting story. The Colt Burgess. Tell us about that story. You told me there's an interesting story that I'm just dying to hear.
Oh, the Burgess rifle. The Burgess rifle was designed by an engineer named Burgess and co-designed by a man named John Browning. John Browning, of course, is an iconic name in American arms making. And it was a very successful rifle. They made about 3,000 of them, and it was essentially a better firearm than the 73 Winchester, in the fact it was a simpler, more workable design. Winchester, however, got wind of this rifle. In fact, they got a hold of one, and they're going, this can't happen. It could actually be a rifle that would put them out of business. So they made an agreement. They got together and made an agreement with Colt. You don't make lever-action rifles. We won't make single-action revolvers. Colt apparently was blackmailed into agreeing to this. John Browning then left Colt Firearms because they weren't going to make his rifle anymore and went to work for Winchester. And in fact, the next rifle that he developed for them was the 1886 Winchester, which was a large caliber, large bore rifle, followed by the Model 1892, which was a pistol caliber rifle, then the Model 94, which is your famous 30-30 Winchester, and then the Model 1895, which came in various calibers and one of Teddy Roosevelt's favorite guns.
But then John Browning, he came back to Colt making two semi-auto pistols in the early 20th century. Am I correct?
That's
the 1911?
Actually correct. John Browning designed the famous 45 automatic. Colt had been making automatic pistols on their own, most of them 32 caliber or what we would now call 380 caliber today. Yeah. And the U.S. Army thought they were good guns, but they were too small. They didn't have any hitting power, so they wanted something more rugged, they had finally got the idea that you cannot make, a complicated gun and give it to soldiers and have them use it in the field. So John Browning designed the .45 automatic pistol, and we all know it's one of the most popular automatic handguns ever made. And it served the United States military up until the early 1980s when they decided to go with a Beretta.
Okay. And tell us about the Colt 1877 .41 caliber Thunder Sheriff.
That was the first double-action rifle they ever built. Double-action pistol, I'm sorry, that they ever built. And it was very successful. It was very popular. But if you've ever fired one, you would know that you use it single action more than you're going to use it double action, because that action is very heavy. Some people say it was Billy the Kid's favorite. However, the only picture I've ever seen of Billy the Kid with a gun, he had a Winchester in one hand and a single action Army in a holster. But it was a successful design, and it was, like I say, the first double action handgun that they ever made, followed by the Lightning, which was a smaller caliber. The Thunderers were .44 and .45 caliber guns. The Lightning were 30, 41, 38, 32, 20 caliber guns.
Okay. And tell us about the Colt Model 1855 revolving carbine.
I covered that earlier with the when we were talking about the Root gun pistols, and I told you about the Root rifle and the Root carbine. That was the one that the 2nd Iowa Cavalry was very happy to get rid of.
Oh, okay, my bad. Okay.
They were reasonably successful, but again, like the early M16s of the 20th century, you had to keep them clean. If you didn't, they had problems.
Okay. And give us a brief history on some of Winchester's liberation rifles, some of their best guns that they made.
Well, the first really successful, again, was the 1866 rifle. They sold a lot of them. In fact, they didn't stop making that gun until 1897. It made all of these other Winchester, but they were still making the Model 66. The next one, of course, was probably their biggest, most popular rifle, the 1873, which started out in .44 caliber, and then later it was manufactured for several other calibers. An interesting story, though, it was never made in .45 Colt, because the rim of the .45 Colt cartridge was so small in those days, it wouldn't hook on the extractor, so they couldn't extract it, so they just never built that gun in a .45.
Okay. Well, Mike, thank you so much for coming on my show. It was a pleasure to have you on here.
I hope I didn't talk your arm off, Richard.
Oh, you did. You know what? I really enjoyed having you on the show. It was really interesting. Really. It was really quite a treat.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Mike McRae, our guest today. And thank you for listening to Fun with Guns on KBCRadio.com. This is Richard Espinosa reminding you, be safe. Set a good example of being a law-abiding gun owner. Introduce your friends to the shooting sports and have some fun with guns in the range. Have a good afternoon, everyone.